CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded December 3rd, 2025. Well, there's good news and more of the otherwise this week, as the flailing desperation of the U.S. empire has become baldly apparent in all quarters of the globe. The bad news is for those benighted by the ailing behemoth's shadow in the Caribbean and Latin America, Palestine and West Asia, Ukraine, Europe, and across the Eurasian continent, and in the land of the brave, too. The beast is determined to take as many down with it as possible. But, and yes, it is a huge one, Trump stands now nakedly revealed, as do his cringing quislings in this country, Canada, and every elsewhere. Eve Engler is an activist and author of many books and countless articles and essays detailing Canada's long, dark foreign policy history. Eve is, too, an aspirant for the leadership of the federal New Democratic Party, and his campaign to be included in the debates has challenged the NDP's commitment to both the democratic process and its rank-and-file members. Eve Engler in the first half. And the Orange Emperor sent his estate agents round to the Kremlin yesterday, ostensibly to negotiate the spoils of Ukraine's remains following nearly 4 years of war. Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner were received by President Putin, and after their five-hour meeting, Putin's spokesperson Yuri Ushakov said only that the meeting was constructive. Putin himself dampened hopes of any settlement based on the proposed U.S. peace plan, telling attendees at Moscow's VTB Investment Forum shortly before meeting the Witkoff delegation, the American plan was unacceptable. John Helmer's a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears, and his many books include The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, Skripal in Prison, the Skripal sequel, Long Live Novichok, the British Poison That Fooled the World, and his latest, The Navalny-Novichok Complex, Chronicle of a Staging. John's latest article at Dances with Bears, By the Versailles Treaty Standard, How to Judge the End of War Terms the U.S. is Offering, examines the guts of the Putin-Witkoff-Kushner exercise in Russia. John Helmer and Trump's money men go to the Kremlin in the second half. But first, Eve Engler and the end of Canada's political credibility at home and abroad. Welcome back to the show, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always my pleasure. You know that. Well, Eve, now you've had an extraordinarily busy week, including defending yourself against charges brought by the Montreal police and being iced out of the first Quebec NDP leadership race debate, among other things. Taking the last first, is the first NDP Quebec leadership debate the last chance Quebecers will get to see a French language debate?
Officially, it is. There could be some riding associations or other platforms that organized a leadership debate, and I certainly hope to participate in any of those possibilities.
What are Quebecers saying about the debate? I saw that even 22 minutes was lambasting them. How was it received in the province?
My impression is it was mostly ignored. Even Le Devoir ran an article about the lack of French in the debate, and then I saw online, and then in the paper they cut it down to like two paragraphs or three paragraphs. So even their own articles they produced on it, they decided it wasn't that much importance. So generally, it was mostly ignored. To the extent that it was covered critically, specifically around the lack of French in the debate.
Yikes. Well, if they ignore you, then you're really in trouble. What is your status now? We've talked many times over these months about your campaign for the leadership. Where are we at?
Well, we're at waiting on the vetting process. We obviously put in on November 10th. We have gotten a pretty, I would say, unfortunately, a fairly clear signal from the party with regards to not allowing me into the social on November 26th, the night before the debate. They, when I arrived with Zuri, my 3.5-year-old, they had somebody standing outside in the cold of from the building where the event was happening, in some far off room in the building, and they denied my entry. And then I asked about it, and then two other people came out, and one by one, they both denied my entry. So they are not even letting me into public events that are open to anyone, not just NDP members that I registered. I'm, of course, an NDP member. So that's a pretty clear sign, I would say, that the party brass is setting the tables to very much block us from the race. And that's not the first signal of that, of course. The fact they wouldn't let me participate in the Ontario NDP convention on September 20th was another sign. And then a whole series of moves that the CEO and other party officials made in terms of undermining our financial agents' ability to get information and receiving documents as were put out in the rules. So there's a bunch of signs that the NDP is not keen on our campaign, but we are sort of we've been organizing accordingly, and we continue to organize accordingly with a number of different initiatives to sort of push back on any effort to undemocratically exclude us from this race.
Well, not all elements of the NDP. You were invited to run by the socialist wing. What do they have to say about your exclusion, which seems to me outrageous, that even as a member you can't get access? I can't imagine how they justify such a thing. But what do your proponents and your supporters within the NDP have to say about the way the power behind the throne is acting?
There's a lot of criticism, of course, a lot of criticism of by people who are part of the campaign, but also by people who are not part of the campaign, by people who view the NDP as, don't want anything to do with the NDP. And then also people who are actually pretty active in the NDP and see this as very undemocratic. So there's lots of criticism, and that came out very clearly around the debate. I mean, this was the exclusion from the debate was pretty crass for linguistic reasons, in that my French is substantially better than anyone that was part of the debate. And also the issues that were not raised, the world, Gaza and Mark Carney's radical military spending was just excluded from the debate. So a lot of people, have highlighted that in this context. Also, the Socialist Caucus has been part of the party for about three decades, and they've run people in all kinds of different positions. They have a formal status with the New Brunswick NDP, and so no one's happy with this. The NDP brass don't seem to care. I mean, again, blocking me from attending a social that was open to everyone, that the publicity for the social said, bring your family and friends. And almost no one was there. According to people who were inside, there was only 40 or 50 people. So it was it was like a poor turnout. There's a lot of hostility within the NDP brass to activism, to directly confronting power, to stepping outside of, let's call it, the liberal norms of political activity, both in terms of the direct challenge of power and what issues and what language is used when, confronting injustices. We did a webinar on, I think about 10 days ago now, Internationalism Belongs in the NDP Leadership Race. And there was about maybe 15 different people dealing with different issues of Canadian foreign policy. And I knew that the NDP was hostile to internationalism when you see the debate where they literally do not ask a single question, including about Donald Trump, a single question about international affairs, not a single question about Mark Carney's militarism. And none of the candidates mention Gaza, and that includes there was all kinds of opportunities. So at one point Heather McPherson talked about baking. There was a sort of let's learn more about you as individuals, and she talked about baking cookies, protest cookies, and she lists off like three or four different issues where she likes to bake cookies and bring them to picket line and protest. She does not mention Gaza. Even like simple things like that, where you just, you know, two words, not just not part of it. And wow, did our webinar about internationalism belongs in the NDP leadership race, did that ever, was that ever a prescient, you know, webinar? Because 4 days later, there's literally nothing about it. That's, I think, the nature of the NDP and its alignment with Canadian militarism and imperialism.
Well, and you got for that event people from, I'm thinking of Craig McIver firstly, but people from outside of Canada, internationally known to take part in that. Another internationalist that is interested and has a question for you, John Helmer, who will appear in the second half of this show, asked me if I would ask you, so I will ask you, about Carney's, quote, no limits compliance with everything the U.S. is demanding for military spending and integration. And the integration of Canada's military under U.S. military control. That didn't come up either, as you mentioned. But what do you think about Carney's no limits compliance?
Carney has pursued just a radical militarist turn. I don't think people, I say it over and over again, but I don't think people have wrapped their heads around how significant of a expansion of militarism we're seeing. There's people out there, weirdly, people on the left who view this as somehow a response to Donald Trump. It's like, okay, Trump is threatening annexation, and so we're going to put money into the military to like defend ourselves from possible Trump-US attack. But it has nothing to do with that at all. I mean, it's Donald Trump that's calling on Canada to increase military spending. And the Canadian military is completely structured to assist the US military. And the amidst the annexation threats, amidst talks about not, you know, boycotting the U.S., the chief of defense staff and other top officials are going down to the U.S. to deepen ties. So they are absolutely, you know, whether it's call it no limits, exact language that John is using, I don't know. But there's no doubt that Mark Carney has put incredible amounts of resources into the military, plans to further expand the military as part of strengthening the U.S. empire's global position. Now, in the context of Donald Trump, there is some ambivalence of being so openly, you know, supportive of U.S. policy to say, for instance, with regards to blowing up vessels in the Caribbean, as we're seeing. Though even there, Anita Anand said it's up to the U.S. to define whether they're violating international law. I think Carney maybe has some reticence of being, you know, totally in the open about assisting U.S. Aggression like that. But quietly, that we know that, you know, they haven't done anything about Operation Caribe, which is Canada's participation in supposed drug interdiction in the Caribbean. We know there's a decades-long NORAD assistance in the so-called war on drugs. And so Canadian soldiers are definitely assisting the U.S. in terms of intelligence and radar and the like in their attacks on Venezuelan ships or other Caribbean ships. We see that with regards to Gaza, you know, the Canadian military participating in the U.S., I don't know what you call it, Donald Trump's colonial governorship of Gaza. That's part of that UN resolution. And the New York Times 10 days ago reported on Canadians part at the U.S. base that's taking over from the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, that's overseeing the U.S. and foreign military operations in Gaza, and then Canadian troops participating in this training mission with the U.S., with the Israelis around Gaza. So all across the world, the Canadian military is working closely with the U.S. Also, there's some evidence that maybe even that the support hub, the Canadian base in Jamaica, may be assisting U.S. military in its militarization of the Caribbean over the past couple months. So all around the world, the Canadian military is assisting the U.S. And what we're doing when we put an extra $100 billion a year, which is ultimately the plan here, into the military, what we're doing is giving greater capacities to the Canadian military to participate in the U.S. military's global power projections. So it is a it should be a centrally important issue for all Canadians, anyone who cares about the world, but also anyone who cares about social programs, because these are resources that are being taken away from, you know, better health care, building housing and the like.
Well, a day after the American so-called peace plan, their 29-point plan to stop the Russia-Ukraine war came crashing to a halt. And I'll be talking to John about that in the second half, too. I heard this morning on the CBC radio that the Carney government has promised $200 million more for military assistance, I guess, to Ukraine, and as well $300 million more in other miscellaneous. I don't know if that goes under the rubric of this military spending increase that you mentioned, the $100 billion, or comes out from somewhere else, or comes out from who knows where, if it's just borrowed money. I don't know. I don't know how this is being accounted for. But in Ukraine, they don't know how things are being accounted for either. The place is rocked by corruption scandals already, and more coming out every day, and in the European Union, who are banging the drum for more war against Russia via this proxy war in Ukraine, too. So here we are up to our armpits in that. Do you know where this 200 plus 300 equals 500 million more Carney promised this morning to Ukraine comes from?
I don't know exactly how that's put forward in terms of accounting. I know there was a big debate at the NATO around how to quantify military aid to Ukraine, whether that counts to the plan of initially 2% of GDP and now, you know, 5% of GDP on military spending. And I believe when they announced it, moving in the target from 2% to 5%, they accepted that aid would be accounted as part of the 5% target, but I'm not 100% sure about that. Also, we saw that the Canada joined the European Union's Security Action for Europe initiative, right? This big military procurement, I believe it's a 150 billion euro initiative. I guess that would probably be about 200, 250 billion Canadian. And so Carney is, you know, part of that so-called coalition of the willing that's about continuing the proxy war in Ukraine. And I saw somebody, I was sent a thing, an estimate that as much as 50 billion, it's possible that as much as 50 billion has been put up by Canada since 2014, but it is a large amount. But ultimately, in some ways, it's almost going to end up being a small fraction of the greater transition of public resources, because the NATO proxy war has been a central justification for increased military spending. And, you know, 50 billion is ultimately, you know, that's 50 billion over, you know, 11 years now. That's ultimately fairly small compared to the plan to hit 150 billion per year on so-called defense by 2035, that, or 2034, I believe, the NATO proxy war is a central factor in justifying, right? So the sum total, how you would ever quantify this, I don't know, but the sum total of the cost to the Canadian working class by participating in the NATO proxy war, by participating in the turning Ukraine into a sort of beachhead to target Russia, and this whole kind of geopolitical game that Canada's been right at the center of at least for 11 years, but obviously goes back before that. You know, the actual sum total and cost to the Canadian working class, we could be talking about, you know, $1 trillion or more in terms of diverted resources into the war machine versus social programs and direct contribution. So it's sums of resources that are kind of hard to wrap one's head around. But it's also remarkable how little discussion, again, nothing in the NDP leadership race or in the NDP leadership debate, very little in the NDP leadership race, and quite frankly, fairly limited. I mean, there's some around the edges with, you know, the the Draw the Line protests in September, some of the sort of more mainstream NGOs and left groups kind of talking about militarism a bit. But for the most part, it's just off the agenda.
You can build a lot of hospitals with that money. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Eve Angler. Eve's an activist and author of many books and countless articles and essays detailing Canada's long, dark foreign policy history. He is, too, running for the leadership of the federal New Democratic Party. Well, Eve, I mentioned off the top, too, that it's been a busy week for you. You were also arrested. So all I've got to say is, Roger Waters, what the...
Yeah, well, last week, Roger was very nice to participate in a webinar press conference responding to a defamation suit that's been launched against the two of us by Zionist fanatic Dalia Kurtz, and also to offer a solidarity the day before I went to trial on Friday. We had a day-long trial, which all comes out of back in February, the Montreal police called to arrest me for allegedly harassing Dalia Kurtz by responding to her pro-genocide racist comments.
No, we've talked about her. Sorry, we've talked about her, whatever about her. But she's out of the picture sort of for the moment as far as your court case goes. Now, this is the police. You hurt their feelings or something or put them at threat. That's what this case was ostensibly about, right?
Yeah, so after they charged me with the Dalia Kurtz stuff, I promoted this Action Network email campaign to the Montreal police saying to drop the charges and to drop this condition that would have restricted my ability to talk about the case. Thousands of people, I think it's 4,300, 4,500, something like that, have ultimately taken action. And the police's response was to charge me for harassing them and interfering in their affairs, in their work, by promoting this petition campaign. And the petition campaign begins with a dear and ends with sincerely. And the demands of the petition were realized. They ultimately dropped the charges. They abandoned the Kurtz charges. And after 5 days in jail, I was the judge throughout this condition that was restricting my ability to talk about the case. They said that was wrong. And there's jurisprudence saying this was basically an illegal condition that was imposed on me. So what was in the letter was morally, certainly, but also legally the right position. And basically the police investigator had violated the law in imposing this condition and had been a very poor ethics to impose the, to bring the charge in the first place around Dalia Kurtz. But basically, so I was on trial for promoting an email petition campaign, and the police claimed it was violence. He used the word violence. It was aggressive manifestation. It passed the red lines of free speech. It was, what was that? Other very hyperbolic language. All about a email petition campaign that began with dear and ended sincerely.
Well, this is all about Israel, though, isn't it? And I mean, and that language by that prosecutor reminds me of what goes on in university campuses, that when Jewish students say, oh, well, we feared for our safety because people were saying they didn't like Israel and so forth and so on. And we've seen the cancellation culture continues apace here in Canada. University of Guelph, you mentioned on your website, and again, it's eveangler.com, the U of Guelph canceled the People's Conference for Palestinian Solidarity. U of Ottawa cancels the Palestine Tribunal on Canadian Responsibility, as well as Professor Richard Falk spent his 95th birthday in custody at an airport at Pearson Airport, I believe it was, detained. He did speak eventually at the new location, but he was detained with his equally aged wife. And even more worrying is the World Beyond War was charged in October at a rally protest outside this Best Defense War Trade Show. by being raided at their homes like a month and some later. David Heap and Rachel Small among those charged and arrested in their homes and had their homes invaded. And they're the usual thing we've seen, like in Britain now with their anti-terrorism laws, their computers and their phones and everything taken. And I don't know if they've been returned or will be returned, but this all hinges together on a continuum, in my mind, at least, with what's happening with you and the Montreal police.
Yeah, I think it does. I think there's the prosecution is very clear that it was the authoritarian language and this notion of how dare you push back against the police for introducing these odious conditions and charges. It was very much a very authoritarian kind of headspace that the prosecution wasn't hiding at all. And the worst of this is the raiding of the homes of David Heap, a longtime Palestine activist in London, Ontario, and Rachel Small, who's been very prominent in the arms embargo research and activism, and a number of others. I think there's three others who were arrested, and a whole bunch of homes. And they're doing this in this manner of, you know, early morning raids, like it's some sort of, these are really dangerous people. I mean, they protested at arms fair in London, Ontario, that had Elbit and Lockheed, and they were successful. They were able, I don't know all the specifics, I wasn't there, but they were able to basically disrupt the arms fair for a certain period of time. I'm not sure if they, you know, it was fully shut down for the day or what. But they were just, it was 100 people or so just standing out front and in front of the entrances. It was nothing violent. There was nothing particularly aggressive or dangerous. All these people have, David Heap's a professor at Western University. Rachel Small is the coordinator for World Beyond War. I don't know the specifics of others, but raiding their homes early in the morning is a very intimidating and aggressive kind of move. But the ethos in our political culture is a seriously authoritarian. Part of that is tied to sort of Zionist push and sort of what we'll call it Zionist authoritarianism. That's really been building over the past two or so years. And then I think some of it is also tied to a sort of a Trumpian kind of dynamic. I was on trial, but really what was on trial was Action Network email petition campaigns. What was on trial was our right to organize, to petition state officials. And hopefully we get a ruling that I'm found not guilty. And not because it's going to have much impact in a direct sense personally. I already spent 5 days in jail. I don't think there's any scenario where I would get anything more than that in time in jail. But that this would be a terrible precedent. It would to give the Montreal police and other police departments the greater ability to say that by sending emails that you're harassing them or you're interfering in their affairs. I mean, the logic of that, if you start thinking about it, it's like if I was walking down the street and a police officer was, and I was in front of a police station and a police officer was, blocked for 10 seconds to get into the door of the police station, arguably I'm interfering in police affairs, right? Right? So if you start defining interfering in police affairs in this completely general sense of causing them a bit of extra time to deal with emails, somebody calling a police station with erroneous information and leaving a message, arguably that would be interfering in police affairs. So it's a slippery slope. The prosecution was very clear that they wanted that slippery slope. They wanted some sort of precedent on that, and that would be very damaging for political movements that challenge power and specifically challenge police abuse of their powers.
Well, we'll have to wait till January 23rd to find out what the court has to say. Eve, we're fast out of time. Go and see Eve's NDP campaign, Eve for NDPleader.ca. Eve Engler, Eve.com for all of Eve's writings and other things. Thanks a lot, Eve, for coming on again and bringing us up to speed. And stay tuned after the break. John Helmer, we're going to talk about what's going on in Russia and what's not going on in the peace talks there. When nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favorite uncle that,